The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Gen Zex. I'm Jeff. This is Braxton. Say hi to the folks, Braxton.
Hey, I'm Braxton. I've been on the comic book show a couple times, so.
You have. Now, Braxton and I met when we started working together at the Dr. Volt's comic book shop. And I fell in love very quickly with this young man. So let me premise out real quick. There's, and you guys probably heard about this on the Left Show on Monday when I did my deep dive on Gen Z getting screwed by the system. But I really, really like young people in America. And Gen Z is currently my very favorite. You know, my youngest is a member of Gen Z, and the kids that my kids hang out with are so open-minded and so ready for change and so ready to make the planet a better place for everyone. They think DEI is a great idea. They, for the most part, think Trump is, wow, what a schmuck. And I have politically, because I am a political animal, advocated for, I don't know, messaging to young people of voting age and right before voting age and addressing their issues and trying to prepare the planet for our old people to fucking die and give it to them in some sort of shape that doesn't look. One of the things I brought up with is the unalived punchline that Gen Z loves so much. You know, they're like, well, dead is easier than this. It's fatalistic and makes me sad, even though I usually laugh because it's always delivered fucking hilariously, you know, but there's an entire generation of kids, you know, Gen X, we got ignored. You know, we're the lost generation. We're the ignored generation. Our parents were just like, fuck it. See what we can do. Let them be feral. You know, and what that's turned into is a split generation where half of them were left feral and became ignorant, racist, dipshit, misogynistic, homophobic ass clowns. And the other of us are frothy mouth liberals who are afraid of the word socialism. You know? And so one of the things I want to do with this show was for us to showcase to each other as the premise, but to everyone else out there, sort of the differences between our childhoods. What was going on when I was a kid versus what was going on when you were a kid? You know, what was your first war? What was my first war? That sort of thing. And to also explore the entertainment that raised us. Because if there's one thing that's the same between Gen X and Gen Z, it's that we had televisions as babysitters. You guys just had better programming.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, better is like relative. I mean,
exactly.
I like a lot of like older stuff. Like my favorite series of all time is The X-Files, like far and away.
Are you looking forward to Coogler's reboot?
I am. I was kind of late to the party, and I watched Sinners for the first time, like maybe like 2 weeks ago.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it's so good.
It looks amazing.
It's so worth it. It explores music and culture in a way that I think film has, like, it's done before, but this kind of, like, does it the best.
Yeah.
Like, the whole, like, centerpiece around, like, music bringing these communities together but also tearing them apart is fantastic. And it makes me really excited for Coogler's X-Files.
I Tiffany, my wife, does not care for horror movies. And when she found out there were vampires in it, she just kind of goes, oh, no. And we always end up watching something else. But, you know, I mean, it just looks amazing. And everything they did at the Oscars was great.
It is. It's a very, I'd call it a very light horror movie. Like, there's definitely blood. There's definitely gore. But what I really liked about it is there's a single jump scare in the entire thing.
Oh.
And it's near the very beginning. Every other jump scare that happens is the build up to a jump scare with no payoff. There's no jump scare.
Oh.
So it
makes
it builds this tension really well, and it never gives it that, like, release valve. And so this movie made me stressed more than anything.
Okay. I can watch that. I think what it is it looks intense. And I'm afraid it's going to harsh my mellow.
It is. Some of it is a vibe killer. It's,
yeah.
It's because it also explores, like African-American history in the wake of the Civil War.
Oh.
I think it takes place after, just after World War I. And so it's, you know, African-American people are struggling in America to find their place, and they're not being, like, given a place.
Yeah.
And so it's about, like, the central, like, binding agent for everything is, like, this community that they're building for themselves that they're being forced to protect from the outside.
Okay.
And it's fascinating as, like, a period. It's like a period piece with vampires.
I like it because, you know what? From Dusk Till Dawn was a period piece with vampires.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we went and saw Dusk Till Dawn as a preview. We were a screening audience, and so we had no idea what it was about. We only knew that Quentin Tarantino was involved, and at the time, I didn't think Quentin Tarantino was a creepy fucker.
It wasn't public knowledge yet that he's weird as hell.
It's a much more innocent time.
Yes.
And though at no point did I ever feel, you know, permissed to use the N word the way he does. I mean, I should have seen it. It was there.
Give him self a role where he says the N word
in a script he wrote.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but no, we went and saw it, and we had no idea it was a vampire movie. It was just a fun little 90s gangland violence flick, and then all of a sudden, boom, vampires. I was like, what the fuck? And I loved it. I just adored it. Did the same thing with Natural Born Killers. We saw that as a screening audience. And then went and saw it again in theatrical release. And I was amazed at how much shit they cut out of the version I saw. It was a way more fucked up movie when I saw it the first time than when I saw it the second time. And that is a fucked up movie. I don't know. I'm looking forward to Coogler's X-Files as well. I think started 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I think he'll do a great job. Wasn't a huge fan of the last few seasons that came out of the X-Files. They were fine. But no, I'm excited that it's two new characters. I'm excited it's not Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
They've had their run. I love David Duchovny as Mulder. Love Gillian Anderson as Scully, but I'm excited to see two new characters take up the roles.
Yeah, I am too. I will take mild exception. I did like those last couple of seasons a lot, but I think that's because I was swimming in 90s nostalgia from having seen them on, you know, broadcast day. And so it was all old to me. And so the new stuff was a lot of fun. But no, I can see, you know, where somebody who's really into the original series, even the when Mulder and Scully weren't even on the fucking show.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was still really good. And I wish Chris Carter would come out with something else.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish he would do something too. Cause I think I may be completely wrong on this, but didn't he work on that, Twilight Zone show with, Jordan Peele?
I don't know.
I may just be pulling that out of the air, and that's a manufactured memory that I have, but
it's a good one. I like that. Let's see. Chris Carter, Twilight Zone, or just Peele? Jordan Peele. See if they work together.
Oh, no. Okay. No, he didn't. I think it's because I was reading, I read an article one time about like the Twilight Zone's influence on the X-Files, and that's where the wires got crossed.
Gotcha. Yeah. That would have been cool. I'm going to write a letter.
get Chris on the phone.
Yeah. Just tell him, hey, get that Peele on the phone. You guys have a chat. I think you guys could make something special. You know what I'd like to see is a reboot of, did you ever see any of Millennium?
No, I didn't.
If I ever dig out my storage unit, I'll pull the DVDs of that for you. I've got the entire series. It was intense. It was a weird fucking show. And the only thing that's come close to it since, I think, is, did you ever see Fringe?
I haven't watched it all the way through. I remember my mom really liked that show. And so I would catch an episode here and there, and I liked what I saw because it looked like the X-Files.
Yeah, John Noble, who most people knew from Lord of the Rings, just played this eccentric scientist with a drug problem. And there was one particular line in there where they're fighting some weird crime thing, and it's all intense and all of this, and John Noble's standing there, and somebody asks him a question. He goes, I don't really know. I dropped 2 tabs of acid and really haven't been able to pay attention to what's been happening today. And I was like, that's awesome. I love this show. All right, let's do this. Let's get started and just let the conversation go where it wants.
Sure.
Right? But I will keep an eye on my time so that we at least get the bulk of the homework done. And then we can talk about whatever we want for the rest of the show. But what I'd like you to do is to close your eyes and breathe in the leaded exhaust from our gas, January 21st, 1988. Still had lead in our gas. Just saying, for all the ways we have fucked up this planet, there's a couple things we did right by you guys. And taking the lead out of the gas.
I appreciate that. I have enough brain damage from a car accident. I don't think I'd need lead in the air to help that.
So imagine, if you will, the Reagan administration has dropped rules that prevented American companies from sending satellites into space that could produce high-res pictures of stuff on Earth. It used to be against the law. And Reagan's like, nah, take a picture of whatever the fuck you want. And now we have, you know, Google Maps. Mm-hmm. And to a much lesser extent, Apple Maps. If you don't want to get there, Apple Maps. the change was included in an updated national space policy signed by Reagan on January 5th, but it wasn't made public until January 1st of 1988. It would allow advanced American satellites that could do high-res pictures for use by scientists, geographers, journalists, and others. The government previously had barred private companies from operating satellites that could produce the pictures showing objects smaller than 10 meters across. But the Soviet Union markets worldwide satellite photographs with a resolution of 5 meters, and French companies had satellites that could produce pictures almost that clear. And he's like, well, fuck, if the French and the Russians are doing it, hand me some jelly beans and I'll go ahead and we can do it too. Now, more generally, not day specific, but more generally, we were just starting to figure out the, you know, the coming out of the Iran weapons thing, where we,
the Iran-Contra affair.
Yeah, the Iran-Contra affair. Sorry, blanked. Took an edible. here's what happens is you and I are recording this for the first time. And so we're in a time I don't normally record. So when I got done with the Left Show about an hour ago, I just reached for my medicine and I took it and then went, oh fuck, I still have another show to do. So
yeah, I took a puff of my medicine, about 2 hours ago, and then, played some video games for a little bit, and so now I'm at a good like level.
Well, it's fun because we're going to talk about video games in a minute because you sabotaged me this week. But January 1st, 1988 saw the release of a movie called Heathers, starring Christian Slater and Winona Ryder. And Shannon Doherty, who has since passed. It was a movie about high school, but dark. It was one of the most honest movies about high school, but it was dark. So it wasn't typical. It was sharp satire. It was uncomfortable. And Christian Slater was the most Christian Slater-y Christian Slater has ever been in that movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially towards like the end where it's, are we doing spoilers? I mean, the movie's been out.
Oh yeah. Yeah. By all means.
Especially towards the end where it reveals like he's picking off the classmates he doesn't like. And I don't know. I feel like his face changes in that. He does like something to like make his face like more angular. So he looks more evil. And it's like it's a physical change along with the mask slipping.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. His face does change in that movie. And I don't know if it's makeup or if it's an acting thing or what. But the longer they go through it and the closer you get to the end, the more mature I believe he looks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So at the center of the story, for those of you that haven't seen it, there's a girl named Veronica Sawyer. She's smart. She's self-aware. And has somehow fallen prey to becoming a member of the most popular clique in school. Three girls, all named Heather. And they're in charge of everything. They're in for who's in. They're in for who's out. They're in for who gets humiliated. And they're really, really good at it, you know? And so Veronica, who is suddenly popular, whereas we see from meeting some of her childhood friends in the cafeteria, you could tell that she wasn't earlier. She just kind of goes along to get along with the Heathers because you survive by fitting in. And then JD shows up, Christian Slater, wearing a trench coat. Because that's what we wore when we were badass and cool back in the 80s. He's got charisma. He's got intensity. He's completely detached from whatever rules everybody else is playing by. He has a really creepy relationship with his father, if you recall. Yeah. Because I think his dad knows that he's a sociopath.
And I think it's like hinted at or... I think his dad knows something's up.
Yeah. Yep. So instead of, it starts with a murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And JD saw that she grabbed the wrong cup.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely knew what was going to happen. And so he had time to plan as she accidentally poisoned this bitch and killed her. So they stage it like a suicide. And this movie could have been serious at that point, you know, and walked itself down that road. But instead, what it did was it just went apeshit at that point. Pain gets turned into spectacle. Adults, teachers, and students, most of whom hated this girl, are talking about how they were besties. That, you know, one of the dorks that she was really, really mean to is like, we went out on a date a couple of times, that sort of thing. And it's not dark to be shocking because it's heading in a direction. JD represents the extreme. Burn it all down. Nothing fucking matters. The Heathers represent the system. They are cruel. They are shallow. They are obsessed with status. And Veronica, played by Winona Ryder, is stuck in the middle trying to figure out if there's some other way for this to fucking work. And that's what this movie, to me, is about. It's not popularity. It's not rebellion. It's about choice. Who do you become when the world around you feels fake or broken? You know, and instead of giving you a clean answer, what Heathers does is something better, and it lets Veronica choose for herself, which was not something that happened often in movies back in the 80s. It's messy, it's imperfect, but it was entirely human. And that's why when you watch Heathers now, it still hits. It's got some problematic moments, it's got some language I don't care for anymore. Well, I didn't care for it then, but now I'm actively aware of my not caring for it. The F slur pops up a couple of times, but it also gives you the wonderful, wonderful line of the mourning father, of his dead football son screaming, I love my dead gay son.
Oh, yeah.
It was
a really great moment of like emotion.
Yeah.
And it was like along with the themes of like choice, I think it also had like very, very clear themes of acceptance.
Yeah.
Of like, because towards the end, it's like, this is just how it's going to be for a while. And so absolutely. I think that was a fantastic moment in that movie.
Yeah. But that's basically what the movie boils down to, is when everything is toxic, do you play along? Do you burn down the system, or do you just walk the fuck away? Now, I'm on team burn it down. I'm a JD guy. Mm-hmm. I don't much care for his methods, but I understand how he got there.
There are much better ways.
Yeah.
But in our current political climate, I absolutely understand. Just start over.
Well, and in the movie, the characters that I'm given, that's the one I choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like in Breakfast Club, you know, I was a Bender guy.
Mm.
I when I was young, I had a stutter, and a speech therapist told me to start not acting, but speaking like a character that I would see in a movie or a television show, to, you know, kind of do what they do. Because much like when people with a stutter sing, they don't stutter when they sing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're training your voice to speak, you can work your way around the stutter to the point where you don't have a stutter anymore. Mine was Bender from Breakfast Club. Because I like what I like. And the burn it down guys are all me. I don't know. But you've seen it, yeah?
I have. I rewatched some parts here and there over the past couple days. The first time I watched it was a couple of years ago. It was me and my friends used to do this movie rotation where every time we'd hang out, one of us would pick a movie and we'd have to watch that. And we would all just kind of enjoy like what each other's liked. And my one of my friends picked Heathers.
Dig it.
And so we watched it. I really liked it. Obviously, like the language aside, you know, dated as was the style at the time.
Yeah. Oh, the outfits. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Oh, even just like the poster of like the Heathers and like the all black, like, I think they're like in like shorter, they're like shorter dresses.
The use of flat tones with bright colors, you know, for everybody. Everybody had their own swatch book for who they were. And so you had the Heathers wearing, you know, blacks and grays and whites with bright colors, you know, different colored ribbons, primary colored ribbons. And then you had Veronica, who was sort of a little of both. And then you had JD, who was flat blacks and earth tones, you know, each representing each color scheme. Just look, when I took film analysis in college, they taught me how to watch a movie wrong. And this is how I do it now. You should watch a movie to enjoy a movie, you know, for whatever it is that it's worth. And instead, I sit down and do critical analysis on what fucking colored ribbons the girls were wearing in the film. Because college broke me.
I do that a very similar thing, but instead of like analyzing the colors, I have like a notebook that I will write down like symbolism that I find in movies. And I just do that because I think it's fun. Like I've always loved
that sounds like a lot of fun.
Media analysis.
I like that a lot. I dig it. So here we go. Winona Ryder, Christian Slater, Shannon Doherty, Lizanne Falk, Kim Walker, people my age will recognize some of these names, you know, and then a whole bunch of people that just kind of did this movie and disappeared. Came out January 21st, 1988 in, I believe, Finland. It didn't make it to American shores until 1989. So I dig it. So that's it. That's January 21st, 1988. Let's take a little break, and when we get back on the other side, it's time for me to go to school.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
I haven't scripted anything yet, so I don't really have a patter yet to hand the time over to Brother Braxton. So instead, I will just turn the time over to Brother Braxton, who's going to take me into a little bit of more nearer history.
Yeah. You said that I sabotaged you. I'd like to address that real quick.
Okay.
We're going to go. I'd like to know how I sabotaged you with what I'm going to talk about.
I had to do homework.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I'll sit down for a couple of hours and then I'll move on to some other project. And instead, I was up until about 2 o'clock in the morning last night, running around heating up the bouncers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So August 21st, 2007, I would have been, man, I would have been 8 at the time.
Oh, Jesus.
sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. I just gonna have to get used to that.
So it, to critical acclaim, BioShock releases, first in North America and then later in PAL regions, a couple days later. I did not play this game until I was probably like 13.
Jesus Christ. I was 35 when it came out. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Yeah, I didn't play this game until the first time until I was like 13. I remember it was just like one like summer afternoon. I remember it very distinctly. I was going to start volunteering at a local orthopedics hospital. And I had to go and get, I can't remember what vaccine it was, but it made like a weird bubble under my skin and it was supposed to sit there for a couple days and then go away. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home after that. And I sat down on the couch and I had on my PS3, I had a massive collection of games and I just picked one that I had never played before. And it was BioShock. If I could go back, I would tell myself, do not play this game until you're like 19.
Ah,
because at the time I didn't understand like a lot of like the symbolism or like the political aspect of all of it. and like, even like when it came out, this game was like revolutionary in terms of like narrative storytelling. Like this was,
yeah, but it is basically a story about underwater libertarians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, in the aspect of like, this was, I believe, one of the first games where the game directly lies to you the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, even I replayed it a couple weeks ago. And even just that opening scene of like the plane crash, because it starts with a plane crash. You're on a plane, you get a package in front of you, and the note says, "Would you kindly," and then it cuts off. And then the plane crashes, you wake up in the ocean, you find a lighthouse, doors open on their own. There's a massive statue of Andrew Ryan, the creator of the city you're going to, and yep. Below it is a big banner that says, "No gods, no kings, only man." And that in that moment, you can completely discern what Andrew Ryan is all about.
Yep.
And then as you get deeper, you go into this underwater city of Rapture and you're given this like voiceover of him talking about how he built this city to be, what is it? He is a man not entitled to the sweat of his own brow.
Yep.
He built this city to be like a safe haven for like mega capitalists who don't want restrictions or like ethical restrictions on science. So just, libertarian hellhole.
Oh yeah. They're doing that in Texas right now. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah.
It's not going well.
No. Imagine if Texas was just underwater and there was no way to leave Texas.
There's a lot of metaphor in that. I could just have a fucking dance party with, but that's not this show. That's the other show.
But yeah, and then as you go through the game, you're talked to by this guy named Atlas, and he keeps saying this phrase, "Would you kindly," every time he asks you to do something. And as you're going through, he's telling you, like, "My family's trapped here. I need your help to get them out." And then later in the game, you figure out, or it's revealed that, "Would you kindly" is a like a sleeper cell activation phrase.
Mm.
The life that your character knew, his parents, his family, everything, it's all made up. He was born in Rapture, raised by Frank Fontaine, who turns out to be Atlas. Frank Fontaine is a rival businessman to Andrew Ryan. And you're a sleeper cell. You were sent there. You were called back to Rapture to kill Andrew Ryan, so Fontaine can take over. And that was that reveal where you're in the office with Andrew Ryan and he hands you the golf club and he's telling you a man chooses, a slave obeys. Would you kindly kill? And then your character is forced to kill Andrew Ryan. And it really, going back to like similar with Heather's, it's about choice.
Yeah.
Because throughout the game, you're finding like these little sisters who were children that were corrupted by this like new genetic material called Adam. And you can choose to like harvest them or save them. And if you're not a monster and you save all of them, you get the good ending.
I always save.
Oh,
I cannot even make myself kill the kids.
The first time I played it, I didn't know what it would do. And so I hit harvest and then I saw what happened and I reloaded my save and clicked save. And that's the way I played it ever since. Every time I have played it, I did it one time. Every time I played it, I never harvest a little sister. I always save them.
Yeah.
Because you just feel like a monster after you do that. And especially the bad, have you seen the bad ending?
I mean, I've played it through and I don't remember my ending. And I only, like I said, I only got, you know, a few hours last night, to really just kind of, Tiffany finally fell asleep. And so I was able to play for a little while. But yeah, I'm nowhere near the end now. I don't remember.
Yeah. So there's three endings, the good, the neutral, and the bad ending. The bad ending is if you harvest all the little sisters. And the ending cutscene, Tannenbaum, the protector of these little girls, calls you a monster, says that you just came to the city to claim it. And then there's a scene of the bathysphere that took you down to Rapture, now leaving Rapture, and the door opens, and now there's splicers on the surface.
Okay.
And then the neutral ending is, it's fine. That's if you harvest. I think you're allowed to harvest one. And get the neutral ending
to get your creep on and go, oh, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you continue harvesting, you get the bad. If you harvest just one, you get the neutral. If you save all of them, you get the good ending. And the good ending makes me cry every time.
Oh,
because it's all the little sisters. They grow up and they have their family and they all come back together to be with Jack on his deathbed. And you get the scene of them all holding his hand as he passes away.
Okay. I can guarantee you, I have not had the good ending. I think I just had the neutral ending.
Yeah. Yeah. The good ending, it's revealed that like they all got to go to the surface and live a full life as like normal people. And it just goes back to that theme of choice, where even though I don't think it's ever said in the game, but it's said in like lore that the main character's name is Jack.
Okay.
Even though he was created to be a sleeper agent, this is all he's meant to do, he still has that choice to be better.
Yeah.
And that plays throughout the entire game, especially with Andrew Ryan's whole, a man chooses, a slave obeys.
Well,
please,
okay, setting aside thematics and the beauty of the story, and it is a good story.
Mm-hmm.
The gameplay is really intuitive, with a couple of little exceptions on refilling health and I want to say mana, but no, Eve.
Yeah.
It was a little counterintuitive for me for some reason. I can't figure out why. I think because right now at this particular point in my life, my hands understand Fallout 4 better than any other game. Like Fallout 4 and Skyrim.
I started playing it on my Steam Deck. And then I switched over to my laptop to play some more of it. And I had to, the controls for that game are not bound intuitively to begin with. I had to go in and like rebind a bunch of them to just make it like okay. But the gameplay is amazing. I think Bioshock 2, despite having a far worse story, does the gameplay a little bit better.
It was more modern.
It definitely was, because you can dual wield. You have the plasmid in one hand, weapon in the other, and also you're playing as one of the big daddies. And so it was just kind of a power fantasy a little bit.
Yeah.
But definitely fun. And then Bioshock Infinite, far and away, has my favorite combat of any of the BioShock games.
Yes, I will absolutely agree with you on that one. And for some reason, getting in a machine gun fight with a robot George Washington is still a highlight of me of that game.
Oh yeah, the mechanized Patriots. That's what I was playing a little bit before we started recording. It was BioShock Infinite. If you play that, if anyone plays that on PC now, do yourself a favor, install some mods. The textures don't load properly on modern hardware.
Oh, for Infinite?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. Now, let's see. I just pulled up my Steam program, and I'd say the last three games I've played, BioShock, obviously, Sniper Elite Resistance. I don't know if you've ever played any of the Sniper Elite games.
I have. I've played 1 through 4, I believe.
5 is great, and Resistance I bought when my dad got sick, and so I haven't been able to get back to play it. But shooting Nazis in the head, always a good time.
Oh, yeah, that's why the Wolfenstein games are infinitely replayable.
I also own those. I'm looking at, what have I got? I've got Enemy Territory, I've got New Colossus, New Order, Old Blood, and Young Blood. And Spear of Destiny. And Wolfenstein 3D.
New Order, New Colossus, and Old Blood are very good. Young Blood is fine. It's okay.
Yeah, I want to just check something. Store page on this. Because now I want to give you homework for something I did that was a lot of fun. But yeah, no, I miss playing video games. Nothing. I mean, modding, learning, teaching myself how to mod Fallout 4 was a lot of fun and made the game a lot more interesting all of a sudden because I already had a shitload of hours in it. And yeah, I don't know. I just sitting down playing BioShock reminded me of a time when I could allow myself the space to play video games and not feel like I was doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. I think it's got a lot to do with, you know, my current underemployment. I'm freelancing whenever I can, and I'm having a hard time finding a full-time gig. And when I get up about 5 o'clock every morning, I sit down at my desk. I do an hour of just writing, where I just sit down and type like in a journal. Then I do job searches for 4 hours. Then I do school for 4 hours. And then at the end of that, I want to do something else. I want to play a video game. I want to do something, but I make myself do other things because, you know, if you like look for work more at night as well and whatever, it's just frustrating. The ease with which I can self-sabotage and taking something that I love playing video games. I fucking love it. And so,
oh yeah, me too.
Sabotage or not, I had a good night last night, buddy. And that's thanks to you. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy I could encourage you to relax a little bit.
Yeah. But, no, I think for homework sometime in the future, it's a game called Unreal Tournament 2004.
I've played that.
I'm going to make you get it, and then you and I are going to play each other online.
Oh, yeah, do some deathmatch.
Yeah, we'll do a couple death matches. I'll mod it the fuck up, see if it'll still let me do that. I used to play in a league of Unreal Tournament 2004.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I was not the best in the league by a far stretch, but I was good enough that I could bench when we did deathmatch. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be there to just kill a few and take a bullet while the other guys were basically being Japanese at that. Say what you will, man. Those kids playing video games in Japan, man, they are just unhuman.
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, they get it. But, yeah, we used to, my buddy Jake and I used to do, we'd play Unreal Tournament and I'd kick his ass, and we'd play StarCraft, and he'd kick my ass.
Yeah, that was me and my friends. We would do Black Ops Zombies, just hours of Black Ops Zombies, and Halo 4's Forge mode, where you could like make your own maps and download community maps.
Yeah.
We would do that from like whenever we were free in the afternoon till like 2 a.m.
I forgot that Sniper Elite has 2 full builds of Sniper Elite Zombies.
Oh, yeah.
Sniper Elite Nazi Zombie Army, it's called.
Yes, they're very fun.
Yeah, and they're hard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, when you're just sneaking around being a sniper in Sniper Elite, you're sneaking around being a sniper. When you've got a sniper rifle and you're being chased by 100 fucking zombies and you've only got 12 fucking bullets, that game, mm-hmm. that game gives me stress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt it was weird. When the first time I played that, I got a very similar feeling to the first time I played like Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Or Silent Hill 2 was what it really reminded me of. Just this feeling of like you're alone and there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then every time you get into a safe room, you're like, ah, why can't I get better ammo?
Yeah, I've been playing the Resident Evil 2 remake. Yeah, hitting those safe rooms as I'm being followed by Mr. X is just, it's an unreal feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember I bought my first PlayStation to play Resident Evil. Mm. And I remember the jump scares were amazing, mm-hmm. you know? And I've gone back and played it again, and I'm like, well, how the fuck did I take this seriously? Now, the remakes are great.
Yeah, the remakes did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, but for the most part, I find the franchise silly.
That's fair. It is very silly. Yeah. If you look into a lot of like the extended lore, it is very much that joke of like finding an audio log of like, we've spliced this gorilla with praying mantis DNA and given it an AK-47. I hope it doesn't break out.
Yeah.
And then the next log is it broke out.
Yeah. 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 But I mean, you look at the Mila Jovovich movies, they're unhinged.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, the first one was kind of stylized and cool. And then after that, they all just went. I mean, and I've watched them all a couple of times because I love Mila Jovovich. Dude, she put out an album in the 80s. And I owned it because I thought she was fucking great. And so when she started acting even more, I was, I mean, first of all, I was smitten. She's a beautiful woman. You mm-hmm. know, she's smart and she's talented, but she has a singing voice. It's amazing.
I've never listened to any of her music. I'll have to go find it.
Yeah, yeah. The one album I remember, you know, was some pretty typical era pop stuff, and then had a couple of Ukrainian. I think she's Ukrainian. Lullabies, folk songs.
Oh, that's cool.
They were wonderful. They were wonderful. But alas. All right. Anything else?
I think that's it for me.
I do. I think that's it for me, too. I think let's go ahead and call this episode number 1.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for starting this. This is amazing.
No, dude, I miss you. And this, even though I pitched this idea to you originally when I didn't miss you.
Because we're still seeing each other 5 days a week for
and I wanted to do it then. I want to do it even more now. So thank mm-hmm. you, folks listening. Please, by all means, we're not going to do a Patreon for this show yet. We're going to try and get a couple episodes under our belt, and then we'll figure out a Patreon hook later. So if you are interested in helping us out, you can go to theleftshow.com. We're doing a fundraiser. There's a big graphic right there underneath the header. If that's not your style, if you look over at the right sidebar, we have all the links to everybody's favorite donation portals. Or you can join us at Patreon at patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. And that's where on weeks that we record shows, we drop down special content for our listeners there. We also have some historic content. Lately, I've been throwing up old episodes of Mansplaining from 2017 and 2018 for your listening pleasure. And I think that next I'm going to start doing Tell Me a Story, another previous show we used to do. So join us over on Patreon or pop over to theleftshow.com. And thanks. Thank you, Braxton. This was a lot of fun, buddy.
Yeah, thank you for starting this. I'm so excited that we will get to do this now.
Yeah, me too. I'll see you next time, okay?
Okay, we'll see you.